Our next guest is Michael Grange from Sportsnet, friend of the show, and Sportsnet 590, the fan. He joins us now in the program. Andrew Walker, Vic Nizar. How's it going, Grange?
It's very well. Very well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, great to chat with you. How are you? How are you keeping? How I know you're following it closely. This is a silly question, but how much are you living and dying with the return, non-return of sports in the NBA?
It's funny. It feels like the longest off season ever. I mean, technically, it is, I think, and we're getting close to that. And so, I don't know. It feels more like covering a labor negotiation, or you know, just one of those huge, giant stories that doesn't move, right? And so, you're just kind of waiting around and on pins and needles. And so, it was, you know, so that part was kind of stressful because you knew something was going to happen and when, but you didn't know exactly what. And now we know most of those details, and so the question is only if. And so I guess now that the details are out there and most of the information is out there, it's kind of been a little bit more relaxing. You're kind of okay, well, if this is when this is happening, maybe I can get a week's vacation here before I have to work, and this goes on for the next 4 months solid, and then, you know, just get ready to go. But I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a giant story. I think it's going to be a bunch of giant events. Sorry, that's my dog who's angry about something. And you know, but I think really the big question is we know where, we know when. I think we still are wondering if.
Yeah.
And can this really happen?
Well, and you know what the interesting thing to me is that, and this is, it's classic NBA versus NHL, because the NBA is so star-driven, it's so personality-driven, anything goes, we've learned that. And the NHL is still a culture of, man, even if you have something to say, you keep it to yourself, you don't want to be the guy. So, you know, we had Kevin Bieck of Sportsnet, he was on our, you know, radio station earlier this week, and he reiterated on Tim and Sid today, and said, hey, like, I don't want to, you know, cause a big thing here, but like all the guys I talk to, players in the NHL, players that are going into the playoffs, hardly any of them want to play. Like, they don't have their equipment. They're not skating. Like, there is so long to go. No one really says that publicly, but in the NBA, like, you hear the truth. Like there are guys that are like, hey, I'm really not on board for this. You're going to hear them say that. And so there's the difference. Maybe these two sports are in a very similar situation. I don't know.
I mean, I think it's interesting with the NBA is there's kind of different views have kind of been bubbling to the surface, and they all have a lot of weight and a lot of credibility. And you know, the most obvious one is this league needs to get back playing, and you know, so did the NHL. I mean, there are provisions within the CBA where if they don't come back playing, that the financial implications for players this year and next year could be even more severe than they're going to be anyway. If there's kind of a revolt of some sort, or if the players decide to back out at the last minute, I mean, there's the potential that the CBA could be torn up, and you know, it would completely change the landscape of the NBA from that point of view. Probably not to the players' benefit, and you know, and just in a less dramatic sense. There's about $1 billion out there to be earned. And the way the NBA is set up, it's a roughly 50-50 split. So, you know, that's all on the table. And there is, you know, the other side is, which we've kind of been hearing a little bit lately is, you know, is this the right time? You know, should there be a statement made and players not come back as a way to kind of show solidarity with Black Lives Matter is it really, are the health concerns, you know, can they truly be managed? And simply, I think there's probably an undercurrent of, you know, of those 22 teams, first of all, the 8 teams that don't even show up, they're still getting paid, right? Like they're not losing any money and they don't have to interrupt, you know, their summer. And then out of those 22 teams, there's realistically only probably 8, maybe 9, if you're being generous, that have a real chance to have a playoff run of any significance, and only probably about 6 that have a chance to win a title. And so, you know, so if you're on a 9th place team, if you're the Orlando Magic, or if you're, you know, certainly the Phoenix Suns or something like that, you know, you're giving up 35, maybe 50 days to earn 8 game checks, which, you know, let's face it, it's not going to make or break most of these guys. While there's a whole bunch of guys sitting at home doing nothing, getting the same money, you know, do they really want to do that? You know, and so I think that's where, you know, there's still a lot of kind of cajoling that needs to be done and convincing, not convincing, but explaining and encouraging, because it's one of these ones where, like, LeBron James' motivations are very, very obvious, right? Like, I mean, he's got a chance to win an NBA title, and he's in his 17th season, and there's only going to be so many more chances. Similarly with, you know, going down the list of all the league's great players on all the league's great teams. But after that, you know, you really kind of have to find a real professional reason to do it. And I'm confident that most of these guys will.
Sportsnet NBA analyst Michael Grange joining us. What's fascinating about the NBA, too, is historically, the biggest names tend to are able to get everyone else in line to some degree. And this is, you know, to me, one of the first times it feels like there's major dissension among even the star players. Usually everyone just follows LeBron James or Dwayne Wade, and they set the tone for the entire league. What do you attribute to that? Is it just guys trying to vocalize their movement or is there something bigger afoot that could be leading to some dissension among the players here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good question. I'm not sure exactly how widespread. I mean, I think, you know, we heard the number about 80 players on the call that was led by Kyrie Irving. You know, that's not a big number. And what the position of those players were, we don't know. And you know, as I was talking before, like, who are they from what parts, corners of the league are they being represented? But I think, you know, I think it'd be very dismissive to suggest that what's happened since George Floyd was murdered hasn't had a massive impact on the outlooks of, well, any thinking person, let's hope, let's start with that. Mm-hmm. And also on players in the NBA, the industry of the NBA, you know, because these are high-profile players, predominantly American black men, and they have platforms. They have kind of lived some version of what, you know, everyone is protesting and angry about to varying degrees. And so I think there's an awakening going on, I guess, is that's the way I would put it. Is there generationally, I think, that's happening. I think certainly the black community and their allies are finding a momentum that, you know, maybe they haven't had for a long, long time. And, you know, and I think, like, I'm sure there's not a single player in the NBA that doesn't feel that and wonder what's the best way they can move ahead to kind of contribute to that momentum and make the league a voice of change and use the platforms they have, use the visibility they have, use the leverage they have. To make changes broadly, but let's make changes within the NBA. I mean, this is a league that's, 80% black American players or 75%, something like that. And I think, what's my math, 3% black ownership? I mean, there's 3 minority owners. Michael Jordan's the only black American owner. And I would say black Americans are underrepresented are underrepresented in executive roles and things like that. So I think, you know, those are some of the things that Kyrie Irving, Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, who are kind of the most prominent names in that players coalition, so are pushing for, and so they should. But I think on the bright side, I think, the league is listening. I think Adam Silver is listening. And so the question becomes, how can, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of, I know there's a lot of discussion about how returning to play in Orlando can beat everybody's goals, you know, can stave off, you know, what looks like a potential financial disaster, and at the same time can contribute and maintain the momentum on some of these other very important issues. So, I guess that's my answer. How's that? Run it again.
Well, fantastic.
Good as always. Michael Grange joins us here on Sportsnet 650. it's everything's overwhelming, right? Because here's where I've come from it. They're going to relaunch in Orlando, and so every day we're hit over the head with these stories of, you know, thousands of new cases of COVID in Florida, and you think, man, like the states, and some of these states are just out of control. How do they really expect to launch in that environment? But then you have the bubble. And then you have, you know, the issue of, I think it's a very good question. You know, does the Black Lives Matter movement and you know, this you know, civil uprising, does it take a back seat when we finally have a distraction of sports and people are able to change the channel? And that's something that, you know, maybe Kyrie Irving, you know, bring up in the last week or so. And then it's also, well, what's the source? I mean, you know, Kyrie Irving, people are trying to determine, is he you know, a bit of a fire starter and all this, or does he have a point? Like, there's a lot of angles when looking at this restart and the reasons that it won't or will go on.
Agreed. And I mean, it's you know, Kyrie Irving, you know, it's almost perfect that it's Kyrie Irving, right?
Yeah, it's the right message from the wrong guy, you know.
Kind of, you know, but I think it's important. You know, Kyrie Irving is probably the most interesting athlete in the world right now, in a way. Like, I mean, he's just so out there. He's so clearly kind of tormented or conflicted or struggling or contemplating his place in the universe and his role as an athlete in that place. And it kind of just keeps bubbling up, right? It bubbles up, you know, on teams he's been on, you know, whatever the role he's in. And now it's even bubbling up now that he's not playing, and there's just something going on inside that guy that he hasn't quite maybe nailed down, right? And so it kind of comes out in different moments at different times, and depending on what the moment and the time is, people go, what? but it's fascinating to watch, right? And it's, you know, it's So I think it's kind of interesting that it's him, but I don't think we should confuse the questions he's asking, the message he's trying to pull together because of the messenger, right? And I think that would be a mistake. I think he's giving voice, and one thing about Kyrie Irving is he's Teflon, or he's impenetrable, right? Like he is, no one can take away what he does on the floor. He's one of the best in the world. He's, I think, hands down, maybe the most dynamic ball handler I've ever seen in the history of the game. Like he's a figure for the ages, and he's an NBA champion. He's hit one of the greatest shots in NBA history. So, you know, so he can take a lot of heat for a lot of guys who are nowhere near, you know, stable enough in their career financially or any other sense. You know, so I commend him for putting himself out there like that. But it's only one way, right? And I think that's what's going to be interesting and fascinating watching all of this, because on the other hand, you have LeBron James. It's almost like, you know, it's hippies versus suits or something, right? And, you know, you have LeBron James, who's, you know, his messaging is impeccable. And if you want to see someone who's doing something, an athlete, who's going to go down in history for making change. I mean, this more than a vote thing that he's, you know, this campaign he started, partnered with some other athletes and some entertainers, and it's about, you know, combating voter suppression in the U.S., which disproportionately affects minority voters, which disproportionately affects Democratic candidates, which disproportionately affects the ability to pass the kind of legislation that would, you know, has the potential to dismantle some of the pillars of systemic racism. That's a big frigging deal, right? And it's not the first time he's done some, you know, his whole I Promise School in Akron. I mean, you know, he's completely changing the demographics of potentially of an entire community. And, you know, so I mean, it's just almost poetic or literary that you have Kyrie Irving and LeBron James on either side of this issue, but both of them are doing important work or raising important questions, and I think, you know, it makes it, you know, you can learn a lot, right? If you really pay attention, And, you know, there's a lot to be learned if you dig into some of this stuff.
Mike, we'll leave you out on something a bit lighter. I was reading your piece on Kyle Lowry. You know, he wasn't finals MVP, obviously Kawhi Leonard taking the honor, but you wrote that he was basically the Raptors MVP of spinning this around. Do you look at him as like the, you know, players are often foot soldiers, but you kind of need someone in middle management to, you know, bridge the gap between it all. Is he that guy then?
You know, he's it's almost hard to put into words, you know, and what's really fascinating about this year, and this is, you know, divorcing, you know, separating ourselves from all the other stuff that has kind of come on to, you know, come under this discussion of returning to play. The actual element of getting back to playing basketball, I am so happy for the Raptors, for Kyle Lowry, because, you know, what we've seen this year is this is what a team that played under Kyle Lowry's image or that was where Kyle Lowry was the undisputed leader. This is what it would look like. And it's a beautiful thing to see, right? Like it's incredibly gritty and resilient, tough. It's a very, very smart collection of players. They're super resilient and adaptable and they just get after it. And Kyle Lowry, you know, this is a guy who's not often, but was very frustrated in his career at different times because, like, you know, he believed he had way more to give as an athlete, as a leader, as a player, and he just felt himself stymied at various points, you know, by competition. You know, he had great guards he had to compete for playing time with, but, you know, he'd butt heads with coaches, he would vent the wrong way, all these kinds of things. And then then during his partnership with Gerard DeRozan, you know, he kind of had to take a bit of a co-starring role there, although I think we all recognize that Kyle Lowry was maybe the real engine. And then certainly last year with Kawhi Leonard, he had to take, you know, he really had to kind of take his hands off the wheel a little bit and find different ways to lead that team. And now all of a sudden it's all his. And guess what? It works. It's really good. And that's why he's a franchise MVP. But one thing in that article, too, is you look back, some of the things that happened in those finals in the context of today's discussion, you know, the incident in Game 3 where, you know, one of the Golden State Warriors owners, Mark Stevens, you know, Republican, white, Trump supporter, billionaire, drunk, and he punches Kyle Lowry in the middle of the game, right, in Game 3. And Kyle Lowry, he doesn't, all he does is just move to the ref and get the guy kicked out. And you know, that was an incredible moment. It kind of got washed over a little bit. If Lowry does what he wanted to do and what he talked about wanting to do later, you know, he's going to hit back. It's going to be really bad. And, you know, he's probably suspended for a game or two or the rest of the series, right? Mm-hmm. So that changes history. And then when you look at the incident at the end of the game where Masai Ujiri got in confrontation with the Oakland police officer, and who went and pulled Masai Ujiri out of harm's way in a way? It was Kyle Lowry, right? Pulled him onto the floor, got him out of the mess. And, you know, when you look at all those kinds of things, like the guy's, you know, he's a super unique guy. He's definitely the franchise MVP. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing him, you know, see how far he can take this team he's got now.
Good stuff. He is Michael Grange from Sportsnet. We'll chat with you soon, Mike. Thanks.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.